SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we're only a couple of minutes ahead of 11, and here in the East anyway, and we think we're going to get Ed, and I mentioned earlier, for those of you that were tuned in to the workouts at Churchill every morning leading up to the Churchill-based the Kentucky-based horses, their departure for New York. You can watch 7:20, and then the horses hit the track at 7:30. And Ed, this morning, Ed and Joe Christofek, and they'll fold in Brandon and Scully and the same coverage that you came to rely on during the lead-up to Derby. And here's Ed DeRosa joining us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Live from Churchill Downs.
That was. This is really fun, and I have already noted, how appreciative everybody should be that Twin Spires and Downs media team moving quickly to make sure that people could watch the horses that are stationed, leading with the Dual Classic winner, and be able to watch them every day. It's a big resource.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to mobilize quickly after a lot of the foundation laid with the Derby show, and definitely hoping to do more of this as, maybe Justify comes back after the Belmont. Obviously, with the Breeders' Cup here, it'll be good to ramp that up as early as possible. So just thankful to be a part of it, but definitely a lot of fun yesterday seeing the stream and following along with the comments. Great to see people excited, and this is a big horse has a way of helping create fans, certainly going to the track and learning the gambling aspect of the game is a big part of that too, and the fun atmosphere, but a big horse and seeing the people excited around it. I definitely remember Unbridled and Carl Nasker with Mrs. Genter watching on TV as a 10-year-old, and that captivated my imagination, and I enjoy the gambling aspect as well. But when you can combine the two and get this build up, that's my favorite part of the game for sure. And to be a part of it here at Churchill with the Derby and Preakness winner definitely raises it to another level for me.
Well, looking forward to the scene shifting to New York, but in the meantime, being able to take in the action more every morning will be terrific, and already off to a good start. Let me get some feedback from last weekend, Ed, before we talk about what's going on, including a betting proposition for everybody on Twin Spires for the Belmont. But we had Vance Hansen. We had a really fun visit with Vance last Friday in advance of the
advance.
Exactly, which was great. And your thoughts on what we witnessed in Baltimore?
Yeah, I thought, from a racing standpoint, and I talked to Bob for a story that's going up on KentuckyDerby.com sometime either today or tomorrow. He said as a fan, he loved the early part of the race. I mean, you want to see these horses earn it. You want to see the best, test each other. As a trainer of, the favorite, he wasn't thrilled to be pressed so early by a champion. But, I definitely agree with his sentiment. We saw a horse race for sure, and Justify got the better of Good Magic and held off Bravazo and Tenfold. So from a race standpoint, definitely thrilled and think the winner absolutely earned it. And I've been kind of surprised to see some people take that away from him. But, it's a gambling game and can understand looking for some reasons to oppose it odds on, as I have. You know, the last two times he's won, you know, from a pick standpoint, I went in another direction and he defeated me. But in both races, we saw the opportunities to have the right horse underneath, whether it was Bravazo, as some people liked, or Tenfold, who was my pick and definitely gave me a little bit of a thrill. But, you know, that trifecta paying over $100 in an 8-horse field with a 2-5 on top, I thought, yep. You know, it was pretty, I don't want to say easy, but, you know, if you stretch past the obvious two to be in the number and just needed one of them, you probably did okay. So I thought the trifecta paid tremendous. We probably saw what Dime Supers do to payouts, as that wasn't as illustrious. And granted, the second choice was fourth, so that was a part of it. Maybe if Lone Sailor's fourth instead of Good Magic, it's a different conversation. But again, we saw in these races that if your right opinion doesn't necessarily need to be on the winner, Stone Cold, to have some success. And didn't get back my Derby losses by any means, but felt good about my approach and trying to learn from what happened in the Derby. And we'll, you know, be bringing it to Belmont as well with, you know, similar like-minded. Can't fit every template to every race, but, you know, I think in these big races with the big pools and knowing where the money goes, you can at least try to maximize your opinion.
Well, we haven't had a chance, you know, given how much analysis was necessary. I mean, I certainly stressed it immediately Monday and Tuesday. When Nick Tamaro joins me, I'll further delve into it. But we really spent the advance work on Preakness, knowing the field size and understanding the circumstance, trying to give people the confidence to bet higher increments than they're used to. And that's a challenge from a couple of different sides and approaches. You have to gird yourself for it when you call a $20 exacta or a $10 straight try. You know, these are not, you know, for medium size and for fledgling horse players, it's daunting. And I'm really pleased. I mean, I had this conversation over and over again with you know, the horse playing guests leading in and in some, you know, some webinar type deliveries, and the feedback has been so encouraging, Ed, that people went ahead and tried, and even the people that were stymied by the result. I mean, in terms of whether they keyed on Tenfold and like I did, or whether they, you know, they didn't have the right horse in exactly the right place, they understood this equation, that, and you're referring to it as well, you know, the approach. And it also carries over, I do feel it does carry over, and I made this reference the other day, it does carry over to Monday through Sunday horseplay. And instead of people looking at cards and say, oh, a 6 and 7 and 8 horse field, I can't possibly play those. Yeah, you can. You just learned how. You just learned how to look at a field and understand the equation and zero in and heavy up. And that, to me, it, you know, should cut away for the white noise of people who just say, oh, this isn't a playable card. Baloney.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. And one pitfall in the short fields that I think can discourage people is, you know, you're inclined, you know, if you're a casual bettor, or just it's an approach you have where you know you have a certain budget and you bring that to the track to play or want to play race to race, the inclination seems to be to add horses to fit what you want to play. And really, your opinion should fit what you want to play. So, you know, in this case, if it's you really only see it coming one way, it doesn't mean you have to be right. It's what the value offers. But if that's a $20 exacta instead of boxing 5 horses because you have $20, then that's what you should do. And I think too often people think, okay, here's my budget for the race. oh, I can use half the field this time, or I really like one horse, so I'm going to wheel the field because I have that kind of money. And that's really the wrong approach. I have no problem with dedicating X amount to each race, but really it's important to really zero in on your opinion and using your budget to maximize that versus just being able to add horses. And unfortunately, the 50-cent tries and pick threes have exasperated that leak in people's games. I don't have a problem with the lower minimum, but they should definitely not be used to just lazily add horses.
I completely agree. And you know, there's also the message here now, 2 weeks in two races in 2 weeks, you know, using a clear favorite when it came to the Derby and then a prohibitively short-priced favorite. And the return in both of these occasions was well worth the punches, and those messages shouldn't be lost either. Let's turn, Ed, to the weekend, because it happens to be, while we're in the wake of, literally, the wake after 7 inches of rain, the wake of Preakness weekend, and we've got plenty to do between now and Belmont, and that includes, for those looking that enjoy the state bred cards, Evangeline tomorrow. I don't want to lose sight of the Louisiana Legends slate. A whole bunch of good lobbred action. Monday, the card they'll draw today for New York, which will be the state-bred spring state-bred day at Belmont on Monday. But we just talked to Marty McGee earlier. We talked to Frank Miramati about Monmouth. We got the Lone Star Park handicap on Sunday featuring the Cowboys and Mouptahige and more. A lot of good action this weekend, holiday.
Yeah. Absolutely. Winning Colors here at Churchill Stakes that I looked at Arlington because I haven't given a pick there yet. And wasn't, unfortunately, as sexy maybe as a big pick. And I'm really looking forward to seeing City of Light in the Gold Cup. He blew me away in the Oaklawn race. I didn't play him that day and was left ripping up tickets. But, I was fortunate enough to be there. And, so it was a little wet that day. And maybe things will be different in a mile and a quarter, but the three-race progression he's had since the Malibu is as good as any, especially in the older group. So definitely looking forward to seeing that race and how City of Light and Accelerate throw down again.
Well, bring us through. What?
Sure. Okay.
Lead us into your weekend play.
Yeah, well, the Winning Colors, I am going to eat chalk. I think Golden Mischief is the best, and it just seems like the others behind her are each going to take, enough money where there's no, maybe if this horse strips up, I can play. So I do like Golden Mischief on top, but I will say, it's race 10 of 11. So throughout the day, there's unquestionably a speed favoring bent to the main track at Churchill, then Miss Kentucky would be the one I'd move up because it doesn't look like there's a ton of pace in there, and I could see her being the beneficiary if things are playing forwardly. But Golden Mischief, the play in the Winning Colors. I did look at the Arlington Classic from everything I've seen on Twitter, including our buddy Gus, I think it was yesterday, mentioning the fields they've had there and the payouts and some of the pick fours and pick fives. So I wanted to look at their graded stake this weekend, the Arlington Classic, and Easy Mosh definitely looks formidable off his turf debut at 3-5. But the Money Dance is the third choice on the morning line. I thought was interesting with the turf debuters, alternative route being the other one. But Jimmy Creed actually has what I was surprised. I didn't think his turf stats would be as good as they are, but he's 17%. The Dam has a win on turf. And the trainer scratched out of a Presque Isle Stakes for this spot. So the Money Dance is the alternative to the favorite. And those are the only two I'd use in that race.
All right.
And then Santa Anita, graded stakes slate on its 9-race card. I already mentioned the Gold Cup. I'm on City of Light. I think he has potential to be the best older horse in training with West Coast needing some time, certainly among the route horses. He'll have to earn it here with Accelerate and some others, but I'm expecting him to do so. I'm going to trust my eyes from what I saw at Oaklawn. And the Whittingham, I am going to try to beat. It's in the post. Certainly a deserving favorite. Not going to shock anyone if he wins. But Frank Conversation's a horse who I think has races that can win this. And he's 8-1 on the line. Wouldn't surprise me if he drifts up from there. And then Dorf, full of luck, getting back out to a mile and a quarter. I think the move turf, dirt, turf, and stretching out each time, now that he's here in the Northern Hemisphere, it just looks like a cagey Hall of Fame type move to me. And I'm not sure about 12-1. He's one I think might take more money than that, but I definitely think he'll be the right price. And I'm looking to back full of luck, certainly at anything, let's say 8-1 or higher.
All right.
And I'll get you out on the Gamely. Went from maybe trying to beat a big favorite and it's in the post to liking the two, I think will take money in the Gamely. But Hawksmoor on the front end under Leperouse looks super formidable here, not a lot of pace. And then Uni is the one that should be right there with her.
Uni's scratched.
Oh, well, then I really like Hawksmoor even more. So that makes it easy to just list one big pick for that race. Yeah, I mean, Leperouse on the front end and a filly like that, I think, has a strong shot. So good to know about Uni. Is there another race? Are they looking?
Well, she got sick.
She got sick
shipping out there.
She's
in California and sick. So hopefully doesn't turn into more than that. But
Right. Now
she'll have to refocus toward probably something like the Boston Spa, I would guess, is where she'll turn up
right.
next.
All right. Well, Hawksmoor it is then. But, yeah, I would say from a fan standpoint, City of Light sort of most exciting for me on the weekend. But the Whittingham, I think, the most playable with Frank Conversation and full of luck.
Excellent. Well, and since we're talking some Churchill, we should also mention the Arlington Classic on Saturday. And you mentioned Izmash, and I wanted to reiterate. Don't forget. In fact, you said Gus. Gus sent out that tweet that drove home how nice the mutuals have been at Arlington with the multis.
Yeah, Joe was telling me they got some purse help, something from the board, and worked hard, I'm guessing, on the horse population, and it's definitely shown in the early part of the meet, no doubt.
I'm just hearing from John White as well. Full of luck will run in the Gold Cup as opposed to the Shoemaker. So decisions are falling into place.
Yeah, all right. Well, good to know people are listening. The mile and a quarter, the horse is 5 for 7. That's on turf, obviously, with my affection for City of Light, probably not looking to bump Full of Luck to a top pick standpoint, but might be the one that can split the top two. Definitely like this horse at a classic distance, though, more than the mile and mile and an eighth he's gotten to run on so far.
Ed DeRose, everybody, EJXD2, and you and Scully both coming to New York?
That is up in the air right now. Hopefully
All right.
You'll see me.
Are you going to have to stand at a machine and punch 2,000 win tickets?
that also is a possibility. Maybe 4,000. I don't know. But, yeah, people love those souvenirs.
Well, you could always send Bethany. That's one of the great plum assignments coming out of
repeat.
And then running them out to the trunk of the car.
Yep.
It makes me laugh every year. Yeah. Ed, we'll look forward to it. We'll have a lot more to follow. You can watch Ed and Brandon and Scully and Joe Christofek every morning now at 7:20. The coverage starts at KentuckyDerby.com. And then it's also, if you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. They're storing each of the training session videos, and it's a great, great service to fans and players. Ed, thanks. Have a great weekend.
It's our pleasure. Thanks, Steve. Enjoy, everyone.
Ed DeRosa, folks, 15 minutes into hour three. It's been a full morning, as expected. I can tell you, by the way, Ed referencing time off of freshening, Audible's not running in the Belmont. I guess to the consternation, I guess a son of Into Mischief out of a Gilded Time mare somehow was supposed to be the preeminent challenger. No audible. However, Noble Indy now getting consideration. He'll be considered instead, but audible will get a freshening. Dave Grenig earlier reporting that retweeted, but the news that audible didn't work this morning, and he will look down the road. So there's the other half of that conversation that has been literally up in the air since minutes after Justify's win in Baltimore. Back after this, Rick Hammerly joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Talking to the biggest names in the sport of kings, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Like a sound you hear that lingers in your ear, but you can't forget from sundown to sunset. Nah, nah. It's all in the air, you hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gonna grab a hold on you. California soul. California soul.
We're back. Back with California Soul Brother number one, Rick Hammerly, joining us from Santa Anita. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's everything out there? It's entry day today. I almost forgot about it, but we're entering for Holiday Monday.
And you got a nice Monday. It's got to
be better
card
than Holiday Sunday. a little slow
absolutely
for Sunday, but, you know, what are you going to do? We're still pumped up about our big horse. Justify, huh?
With good reason. You called him the wonder horse early. You were out ahead of it.
He is the wonder horse. I mean, look, all you needed to see was that last 16th when it just kind of came out of the clouds, almost even in slow motion, and just said, okay, of course he was going to be in front when he came out of the clouds, and of course he was going to win. And, you know, if a basketball team wins a game on a last-second jumper, are they a bad team? I mean, it's like, oh, we only won by a neck or a head. It's like, please.
Good
come
analogy.
On. If there was, you know what? if there was ever, if there, as you know, anybody would probably been through it ad nauseum all week, but if there was ever a race to lose for a horse that started four times with the weather, the close confines at Pimlico, I mean, it's everything's on top of each other. The track, you know, literally seeing him not like the track, slipping and jumping and all over the place, getting pace from a legitimate horse all the way around the track, and then fighting it off and you know, saying, okay, what's next? Jumping back 2 or 3 days later and looking like, you know, they're just looking fresh as could be. And on the human side, have you ever seen Bob Baffert in this position, you know, going into a Belmont with a Triple Crown? I know we've seen it closer here because he's here. He's like a little kid. You know, he's approachable. I mean, when he was, the American Pharoah deal was going on only a few years ago, I mean, I was afraid to ask him a question about entering a maiden in the third race for Thursday. I mean, I didn't want to talk to the guy. It was like he was, you know, a little bit more fidgety, and you could tell his whole mind was, he's as relaxed as could be. I mean, he gave a press conference yesterday with Mike Smith for the local media. I thought it was going to be 5, 10, 15 minutes. I turned it off after about 20 because I had to go somewhere, which is still available on Xbox TV if you want to go check that out. These guys were answering all kinds of questions, and both these guys, Mike and Bob, they're just like a kids in a candy store. They're just having a ball, enjoying it. I mean, there's no pressure, it seems like. It's preordained. It's amazing, but it's fun to go through. But I can't wait to get to New York and be part of the scene.
Well, maybe it was all preordained to some degree, Hammer, that you couldn't make the trip to Derby, and it's all, you know, building up to, you know, to June 9th.
Yeah. Maybe, but I know one thing. I'm gonna be there. I mean, even myself, going into the American Fairways, all pumped up. Can he do it? I guess maybe it was because of the long wait, 37-year gap, and everything. But I'm not even thinking about it. Just gonna show up and watch him win, and deal with the aftermath when it's over. But hey, it sounds crazy, but it's just, I've been that way this whole Triple Crown.
I just don't
see anything else. And then, of course, the other good news that broke the other day was the Great Barrington back. I can't believe it. I've been staring at this picture on my wall that I've had here for 10 years with the tote board and the grass growing over the tote board. And guess what? It's going to come back to life. I saw someone came into my office a little bit ago, and I said, see that picture? They go, yeah, that's a great picture. I go, that track's coming back. And they say, you got to be kidding me. So that's kind of cool. You know, for 5-6 days in July, right? Something like that. Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
We'll see.
Next year, 19.
Well, we'll see how it gets utilized. And there's all different possible ways this can go. I mean, it'll certainly start out, you know, it'll edge, you know, come out kind of slow and build from there. But I had had a conversation with Lou Raffetto, and there's a real long-term possibility here that this, not only would it just be a novelty, that beyond that, Great Barrington as a town, Hammer, you know, you've been through, but it's even been a few years since you've been there. It's a vibrant spot, and this would really work. I mean, this would be a hit as a couple of boutique-y kinds of spots on the calendar. You know, midsummer, early summer, maybe even a little overlap with Saratoga, the Monday, you know, dark Tuesday kind of thing, and then in the fall, they've got to run it in the fall. They got to take advantage of the foliage.
It'll be kind of like a couple of Suffolk-type meets?
Yeah, that's probably how it starts out, but it could then expand from there and get into more, you know, more dates, and they could also spread it out, frankly, throughout the summer and into the fall. I mean, September, it was the traditional fall circuit, the fair circuit, and you know, particularly, that would be Great Barrington. You'd be packed. You'd be mobbed in September and into the first week in October or so. Be a home run.
I think you're 100% right. I think it's great.
Yeah, this has got all kinds of potential, and the people in the community, they're all for it. Although some people are already ruining the traffic. The first thing people talked about was the traffic going back to the.
Send them to LA for a weekend. They'll do it. They'll figure. We'll show you what traffic's like.
Exactly.
Come on.
Speaking of hubbubs and I don't know. I want to call it a dust up. Talk about the CHRB news, including Rick Boettcher with some missives. What should we interpret from that get together?
Tell me what you're, because I know they had a meeting yesterday and we were in taking entries and pounding it out here. So I didn't see a follow up. So you enlighten me.
Well, the most interesting portion is absolutely Boettcher laying out his concerns about computer wagering, batch wagering, robotic wagering, however you want to term it, and the effect that it can have in terms of the way the rest of the public, the rest of the horse playing public perceives what's going on, and most notably the late odds changes. I brought this up last week with Don Johnson, and he maintains that his group and the way they bet and the way they feed into the pools is a steady series of transmissions, and that they are not betting at all at the bell and contributing to what's perceived as late odds changes. And I've explained this over the years repeatedly. I mean, 70% of the pool comes in the last 3 minutes and 30% in the last minute. And the flushes, the last few flashes, they are always triggered behind the visuals that you see in terms of the odds, the display package in terms of the visual demonstration on screen is also always going to be a couple of flashes. It takes a couple of different flushes and changes in the running order on the graphics package to reflect the final odds. And so, you know, people get this perception that the odds are changing during the race. They're not. They're all, you know, whatever the odds are was decided with the last flush. But visually, that message doesn't get delivered out visually. So, you know, that's a,
well, you're right about that. And like I said, I did not hear yesterday, but I did want to make one thing clear. Nobody is betting after the windows are closed. That obviously would be pretty bad, but nobody is betting. They might take it up a little closer that these groups that do bet late, and you hit it right. It's all about the cycle. And being able to handle all this and cycle it through. Cycles used to be, you know, 60 seconds apart. You wouldn't see it for, you know, literally half the race. Then they went down a little bit. I believe they're into about the 20-second range.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's correct.
20 seconds of the cycle. So, which obviously more people, you're watching the beginning of the race, and if they bet, you know, towards the end of the time allowed to bet before they hit the button to shut the betting off, you still have that 20-second cycle for the money, all the money to get in from all the outlets before it all shows up. So, hence, you're seeing that 3-to-1 shot that goes into the gate coming out at 2-to-1, or that 2-to-1 shot that's going down to, you know, 7-to-5. And, you know, on the other end, you're seeing the 10-to-1 that goes up to 15-to-1, but you don't see that too often because, you know, they don't win as often. But, you know, they're trying to improve the cycle. It's just a matter of volume that comes in that, you know, they've trimmed it down. Like I said, it used to be a lot longer than it is now, and that's just... you know, it's kind of the way it is. There's a lot of options that I've heard talking about, which I don't want to really bring up because there's three or four ways of going around. But the concern is the visual, and anytime the better or, you know, it has a concern, it needs to be addressed. And I'm glad they're addressing it in some fashion. And I think there's a way to do it, but I don't want to give my opinion because I don't know what they said yesterday. But I just want it very important for everyone to know, no one is betting after the bell. When the button gets pushed, it's a universal button. There's nobody in there, you know, canceling bets at the last minute and all this other stuff. It is truly the cycle. But I have to talk to Rick Baedeker about another issue, and I will. I'll sit down and ask him, you know, kind of break down what they're talking about. But the first step, as you know, to addressing these issues is to get it out there. Get it addressed, start talking about it, and although we don't move sometimes at the speed of light, this is now, you know, enough noise has been made about it, good noise, to, I think, address it further down the road.
Absolutely. Now, and I've been trying to, you know, get this conversation out particularly on the computer groups, and, you know, whether it's been with Paul Matisse and Maury Wolf, over the years, we've really tried to enlighten everybody as to, you know, this portion of the handle and what it means. I mean, Maury particularly has been out ahead of this and is probably the most knowledgeable individual in and around wagering in the game on this topic. So we, you know, then have a guy like Don Johnson make a rare, you know, public conversation on the topic, and, you know, we've tried hard to, you know, give everybody as much about it as possible. Hammer, I want to slip in. I didn't get a chance earlier in the show. It's been a busy morning, but yesterday that pick six sequence I went over with Tom Quigley, and I got stymied early because I tried to tiptoe with a couple of singles, which didn't work. There were 1, 2, 3 faves that won in the sequence, 2 second choices, and then the fourth choice in the nightcap, who I was kind of all over. And this sequence, almost 7,000 in the payout, 3 times the parlay, basically.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Paid
great.
It had the look of paying 700, and it paid 7,000.
Now, that horse, you know, it's funny. Bob's bad boy, a couple of different contributions, and I was just happy enough to get out with the $200 pick four, frankly, and the clues to getting to this horse, and he was the best paying in the sequence, 1740, and I keyed off of him on top, and he had speed, and that was a commodity, in fact, between Andy Harrington's notes on the race and Brad Free. And, in fact, Quigley was talking about, you know, Brad's interpretation of the sequence, and I went and read it, and Brad stressed that Bob's bad boy had speed, which few other horses in that group in the nightcap could have. And Stewie Elliott has really taken to the downhill course. And those two things contributed to my putting him on top of Camps Bay, who ended up going off at 3-5, which was ridiculous in that group.
Right. And speaking of Stewie Elliott, he's had almost a rebirth here in the second half of the meet here. He's riding great. He's
Carolyn Conley.
You know, she's pushed him along.
Yep. That's a great story.
Sometimes that helps. You know, she's been out there knocking on doors and, you know, and making some noise out there, and it does help. And, I mean, he's walking around. Sometimes he just walks around, he's a little smile on his face and lately. So it's pretty cool. He's a good guy.
It's a nice story. Stu Elliott enjoying Southern California. Hammer, let's get into the weekend. And tomorrow, you certainly got some nice fields that came together. And particularly the way the Gold Cup at Santa Anita. This is a good group.
Yeah, you know, if you kind of look out there right now, circle this date, there's not a whole lot of older horses in our game to draw from. Some of the ones that, you know, Bob's big horses, the, you know, Gold, West Coast of the world, collected, they're on a little bit of a break. They'll get ready for the next. And I mean, there's really not a lot to draw from, so we're happy to have a lot, you know, a few of them on the road, I mean, that aren't on the road, they're staying here. And so we entered with 7, and it was kind of a maybe type of 7 with, you know, little Scotty was in yesterday. He scratched, or he was going to be in. He scratched, so he's staying here. Accelerates in. We got Prince of Arabia. City of Light is running. There was talk of him, you know, a month ago, going to the Met. And Dr. Dore was originally going to the Met. Now he enters here. I just talked to Bob because I'm staying. So he's in. Pavel's in. He's talking about entering in the Shoemaker. Not sure of him. Full of Luck did enter in the Whittingham, but he's staying here. So in this race. So in the end of when the dust settled, which is actually why the race is the fifth race and not later in the card, because we had a chance of this being a 3 or 4 horse field.
Right.
But,
good point.
Hey. We've got a good race going here.
I agree.
Accelerate, who we've talked about 6 months ago, or actually more than 6 months ago now, going from a pretty much a mile or mile and a 16th type horse. And John's, you know, later in this horse's career, he's a 5-year-old, and Sadler's just done a wonderful job stretching him out. I mean, he won the Santa Anita Handicap at a mile and a quarter and got beat a neck in the and the Oakland Handicap going 1.8 miles. So all of a sudden, Accelerate. I mean, he's at the top of the division, at least right now, and he's one of our top horses. He's in there. City of Light, who just has gone from the Malibu at 7.8 to winning the Triple Bend to winning the Oakland Handicap, going for 4 in a row here in the Gold Cup at 1.25 miles. Dr. Dore, who kind of literally exploded on the scene, couple of allowance races, won the Santana Mile, which, yeah, you go, well, that's a nice race, that's great. And then going 1.8 miles, just whistled in the California in the prep for this race, and, you know, ran through the TV, and he's staying here. It's great. Pavel, I tell you, wait and see this horse get a run in a long race for a while. He's had some trouble. He had a lot of trouble in the San Pasquale. Thought maybe he'd run back here in the big cap, and he didn't. He went to Dubai and ran a pretty good fourth. I still think this horse has a super race in him, and I kind of hope they don't go in the Shoemaker and try him on the turf and stay here. And if he does, I really want to see this horse stretch his legs. I think he's the real deal, but we haven't really seen it since that great run in the Gold Cup last year. But you know, City of Light is just on an absolute roll for Michael McCarthy, and it's good for him. So, I mean, I like him to keep the roll going, but Dr. Dore is going to keep the pressure on and Accelerate. He can sit a little bit. So we got a good race with these this pack of four here going.
That's great.
Sure.
It's a good set, no doubt. Let's talk about the Whittingham too, and now we can take Full of Luck out of the Whittingham, right? Because he's running
correct
on the main. Oh, you know what?
I put it this way. If we didn't have a rule in place where you can't run two horses on the same day, you might see it. Jerry might be one of the ones that would try it, but not so much now.
Well, you know, Hammer, I got to mention, just because it does impact Sunday at Lone Star, that leaves the Lone Star Handicap with four horses, Full of Luck not participating. So that leaves Muptahee, Shotgun Cowboy, Fear the Cowboy, and South Beach as the four that'll run in Texas.
Which just goes to show, I mean, there you go. I mean, as far as another handicap race with the four, and when, you know, one of ours is out there, Muptahee. So not a slim pickings right now. I mean, it'll pick up later in the year as some of the rested horses come back. But, yeah, it's a tough division.
Well, the Whittingham, Hammer, and can't argue. You lost bad luck on the Gamely because you had Chad Brown out there with Uni, and she got sick on the plane.
Yeah, you know, after winning it with Lady Eli last year, was, you know, pretty sure he was going to send one, and he did. And you know, always that's always tough luck. So with her out of there, and a couple, I know I had a big smile on Nick Asato's face yesterday, who is Slam Dunk Racing, and they have Madame Dancelot and Beau Recall in there. Who then those two fillies are doing great, and a chance here to pick up a Group One locally is great. I mean, they both, you know, kind of nibbled around the edges of Group One, so it'll be a good chance for them. They're both training good. They both have pretty much the same style, coming from well out of it, which leaves Hawksmoor. we're glad to see her show up, but it leaves her with a distinctive pace advantage in here, and she hasn't won this year. She's only run once, but a real nice tightener not too long ago. So she'll be set up here. She'll be the one to catch. Madam Stripes, you know, I don't know what they've changed the style of this filly. I mean, she was doing great there, coming from off the pace, and then, you know, in the Royal Heroine, she's on the lead. I didn't understand that, and then showed a little bit of speed last time. So maybe they're trying to change her around a little bit, but she does her best running when she can sit off it. So she's still a nice filly as well. But a well-balanced race. Long shot in here, Midnight Crossing for Richard Baltus, who this horse hasn't won this year yet. She's a nice filly. She won it earlier in the meet when we were still running in December, and she could be a sleeper here with Brice Blanc, Midnight Crossing.
Well, Blanc, take a look at the Blanc and Baltus numbers, because they're gaudy, including a fat ROI in the $3.5 range together. And he's become the regular rider, more or less, on Midnight Crossing, and that includes some big prices, the Frankel win most notably. But in addition to the, you know, to the inflated mutual there, they're still clicking around 30% together in other opportunities. So Blanc and Baltus seem to unite for intent.
That's a good, perfect way to put that. And like I said, they're going to slide under the radar here. And, you know, there's no standout. And this is the type of race where you can see this type of horse like this go in there and, you know, pay $40. So keep
well,
your eye on
Well, I'm also, you mentioned Madam Stripes, and I'm still frustrated, you know, going back to Derby weekend and the Distaff Turf Mile, where I got a feeling, you know, being down inside was the wrong part of that turf course. And that was also the case with Mullins as well on the boys' race and the three-year-olds. So I'm going to be hard-pressed not to use Madam Stripes fairly prominently.
Absolutely. And then coming up on Monday, which we take entries today, the Shoemaker is going to come up a real nice race for us. The Blackjack Cat, I believe, is going in for Mark Glatt, the colt that ran third in the Breeders' Cup, had a couple of comebackers, and should be ready to run his best race. Bowie's Hero, winner of the Kilroe, Colonist from the Hollendorfer barn, coming off a just got beat a neck to What a View. What a View has been around a long time here, won the Kilroe a few years ago and been running short, mile short is for him. He's stretching out in the Whittingham. And, you know, Kenny Blacks trains him, and he's just, he's done a great job with this horse, keeping him going this long. And you know what? I think he feels he's got a little bit better chance in there going long, maybe out front, slowing the pace down. So he's not running the mile here, which would even add to this, but he won't be here. Flamboyant, who's in that long race, may cross center. Heart to Heart is here, who will probably go favored off you know, his two recent victories, and he likes to run on the front end. Hunt from Phil D'Amato is supposed to be in there. It'll be his debut this year, but he turned that horse around last year, and a tough place to come back, but he'll be fine. And then, of course, Ohm. Ohm was back, and, you know, back from a good try in Kentucky. I know Danny, I don't think he was real thrilled about going. He wanted to stay here, but they went there and didn't run terribly to Heart, but back on home ice, it might be all right here. So looking for, and like I said, there's a possibility that I heard Pavel might even try to turf in here. So very good race on Monday for the Shoemaker. And that's it, as we inch closer towards the Belmont and the end of our meet here, a month away.
Nice. Well, Hammer, we'll connect next week and do some recapping, and we'll be that much closer to that special moment when you and Jimmy Ventura come around the corner at Belmont and sit down.
There you go. No. I got a 609 call coming in, so that's South Jersey, so we'll see who that is. Anyway, always great to talk to you and everybody. Enjoy the three-day weekend, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Rick Hammerly, folks, away they go, and Hammer at the Beach yesterday. That was
a couple days ago.
Nice. Well, bypassing the mountain trails where
at the beach.
Yes, where dangerous snakes are lurking.
I'll tell you. All right. Thanks,
Hammer.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure.
For those of you that didn't see the picture, go stroll back through Hammer's through his timeline, and he jogs up in the mountain paths and almost jogged right into the path of a big, apparently, because he had it looked at by paleontologists what's the study of snakes, serpentology, and Hammer could be dead, actually, could have been, because they wouldn't have found him where he was hiking. I'll tell you who found the winner's circle in a big way. We talked earlier, of course, the start of the show, to Pete Fornatel about the excitement at Santa Anita this past weekend, and it wasn't lost on me at all. The Saturday portion, I was in Baltimore, and I'm watching, you know, the occasional snapshot of the leaderboard, and then all of a sudden near the end of the day, in the evening actually, out comes the list of the eight finalists that were going to be final table participants for Sunday, and grabbing the bottom rung, I see Joe Metka, Philly Joe, and I thought, look at this, and happened to even comment to Nick. I sent Nick a text, and I said, look at this, you and Philly Joe. And then watching race by race on Sunday, and we were making our way back from Baltimore, stopped at Belmont and saw Carlisle Bell, and had a nice visit in New York. And as the afternoon, you know, early evening, Joe made a steady advance and then leapt to the top of the leaderboard and holds everybody safe. And Joe Metka joins us now. Philly Joe, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for those kind words.
Well, this was fun. And, I mean, you know, you've participated and, you know, have had your share of successes and gotten into, you know, some of the big contests and big days and NHC and so forth. So for you to take your turn in the spotlight like this, really, really fun. And I don't know if you heard Pat earlier, your, you know, lifelong friend Pat Cummings. I had to bring that up with him as well. And of course, with Nick. And every time when you guys used to all come visit wherever we were doing the show with, you know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse blocking out the sun. And just so happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it was just a surreal experience. I mean, it was just I've been knocking at the door a couple times, and it was such a fun contest. Really, my hats are off to Nate Newby and Tom Quigley at Santa Anita, who were just amazing, and of course to Pete and Jonathan for trying to put something together for the horse players. I'd never been out to Santa Anita, and I said, I'm going to make this trip out, play in the contest and see what happens. And it had a positive outcome for me.
Were there elements of this that suited your play to some degree, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually a double player, double pick three, pick four player. When I realized that we could play doubles, there was a few things, I like the Dutch doubles and everything else. So I said, I'm going to give this a shot. I knew I was going to make a pretty big play anyway. I mean, it was a $5,000 entry fee. I knew I'd probably be betting that at least at Pimlico that day, for the Preakness, when, of course the rain had come and it really washed most of the card out. I still said, I'm still going to play in it. I liked, some plays, and I said, I'm going to take a shot at it.
How did day one unfold? And I guess the first portion of this is getting to that eighth slot. And was that strategic, or did that just happen?
It was, a little of both, maybe. You know, I knew the first couple doubles I played I didn't hit, and then I did hit something to get back up to about, I believe, at around $5,800 or so. And then, like I said earlier, I knew I was going to make a big play, Axeman, into Justify. And I thought, you know what, if I can at least double up on that, you know, maybe get $4, $4.20 off of that double, I thought, you know what, why not? I'm going to take a shot at it. And, you know, it paid off, and it got me, you know, got me moving. And then I hit another decent double later on in the day. And I just, you know, I was sitting with around, you know, 15,000, 15.2, and I didn't really like anything the last two races. And I said, you know, I didn't want to go down playing something that I didn't like and losing that way. So I said, you know, I'm going to sit and see what happens. And there wasn't much movement, two races to go. When that race ran, no one really was catching me. And the last race came around, and I just made a decision to sit and wait. And it paid off. I mean, I know that usually doesn't happen, but I got lucky, and it paid off, and I got in the eighth spot, I think, by $70 or $80. So
when we were watching, and it was fun that the video, you know, there was the live, like on Sunday, you know, able to latch on to that last race, and you know, I was watching the actual race. I think I don't remember if I had the laptop watching the race, you know, off of a feed or in the phone, but anyway, I had both, and so, and they weren't perfectly timed, and you know, I kind of knew from watching the race live versus the watching you and Nick watching the race,
yeah.
Because they didn't put up the final selections. They'd been putting up final selections, so it was easy to track, you know, where things were headed. But if they did it, I didn't see it, so I didn't know who you bet on. And it's
okay.
Funny because I was watching Soy Fett. It became obvious that he was involved, and then he dropped back, and I knew that it was Soy Fett that had lunged at the wire to win, and I thought, well, nobody played Soy Fett. I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah. We knew. I was on the nine, and the nine got Rye, and he, right from the start, I knew I was in trouble. So at that point, it was more of a, okay, I hope, you know, a horse that no one else has doesn't hit. We were all on different horses. Everyone in the last, I believe, Nick was on the 12, I think. Tony was on the 11. And then I believe Justin was on the 3 well-developed. And the 3 almost, I thought the 3 was going to win. When the 3 got the lead, and, you know, I really thought the 3 was going to hold on. And then Soy Fett just came between horses and nipped him at the wire. And at that point, it was honestly, it was surreal. You know, Nick looked at me and I looked at him, and he was like, yeah, you've won. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And it was just this surreal moment.
That's awesome. How close had you come over the years to a big win like this?
Not this close. I mean, you know, I played in some online stuff to qualify for NHC, and, you know, here and there in some live money contests, but this was, you know, this one takes the cake. You know, for me, it's tough because of my day job to really travel around the country and play in these contests, so I sort of have to pick and choose my spots. You know, if I get to play in one or two live money a year, you know, I'm happy with that. You know, like I said, because of the day job, I don't get to play in them often. So, you know, I got lucky. You know, it was really, really fun, and I got lucky, and you know, no one else was hitting that day, and I'll take it. Sometimes those are the wins you have to take.
Well, there's a degree of that, we know. And, you know, was last year your first NHC or the year before?
It was 2 years ago. It was 2016.
2016. Well, this now provides you with not just...
It was 17. I'm sorry, because then I'm a year off. Yeah, it was 17.
Okay, so...
Yep.
Well, because frankly, the whole NHC, you know, the fact that the year that you win is not the calendar that you're participating, but which is confusing. Not only do you get this kind of a score, but the fact that it's going to be the pilot for whatever becomes of the show and the concept that Pete and Jonathan are championing, the fact that it's going to live in forever on the internet, as opposed to the more typical weekend affairs.
Sure.
It's so great.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Once my niece and nephew get older, they'll be able to pull it up on YouTube and see it. So that's kind of cool.
This has been, you don't walk around with the name Philly Joe and not earn a Philly nod. It's been a very heady run for particularly for somebody like you, who is Philly based.
Oh, yeah.
And between the Birds and Nova and now you, maybe you, are you the final part of the three-part championships?
I hope there's more for me and more for the city also. But it's been a great run for us.
Well, Joe, this was really fun, and as I tweeted out to everybody, just a delightful result, and somebody that takes his place rightfully. You love the game, and you've got so many friends around it, and couldn't be happier to see this to see your name up in lights, as it were. And now we'll look forward to watching the video production too.
Yep. Definitely.
Joe Metka, everybody. And you can follow Joe on Twitter as well, Philly Joe.
Yep.
And this pay for thrills is Joe's nickname on Twitter. So jump aboard, and you'll see him. We'll see you at Belmont, right?
Oh, yes, I'll be there. Yep, I'll be there probably that Thursday.
Perfect.
So.
Well, then come by with Nick, and... you've now supplanted Jonathan as Nick's handicapping partner for the show.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Joe, not at all. Philly Joe, everybody. Philly Joe Metka. A great way to wrap up. We started with Pete and close out with Joe. And Rick Hammerly, of course, Ed DeRosa. Frank Miramati. That mama. Marty McGee. A lot of fun with Marty today. Pat Cummings as well. Good luck this weekend. Well, a lot of good action to choose from. I'll probably do a little Santa Anita and a little Monmouth myself. Don't forget, Sunday, free. In fact, they just tweeted. NTRA, NHC, four seats, free pick and pray on Sunday. And we'll be back with you Memorial Day Monday as well. We'll talk to Nick then. We didn't get to Nick today, so we'll do some handicapping with Nick on the Monday holiday cards. HRRN this afternoon for plenty of action around the ovals, and I will wish you the best of luck and talk to you Monday.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.